a pretty little thing approaching me. She said, I never seen. Welcome back to the WRSU crew here on this Wednesday evening, just past 7 o'clock, 7:04 Eastern Time, live from the College Ave Student Center on the fourth floor. Dylan Allen with Jack Passaic and Gideon Fox with you on this Wednesday night. Guys, again, we mentioned crappy day of weather, and then we got on a bus tangent with apparently a new bus here that has been from Auburn. So interesting stuff there. Check out the Twitter for that poll. Let your voice be heard on your favorite Rutgers bus. But let's shift gears to the NFL. We talked about Rutgers men's basketball in the first hour. Let's talk about the professional sports world now. NFL playoffs, NFL in general. And Gideon, you and I are both Giants fans. Jack, you are a Cowboys fan, so both our teams out in the divisional round. So neither of us have a dog in the fight, per se. But I can assure you we're all 49ers fans this weekend. Gideon and I are. But you know, it'd be tough to root for the team that eliminated you. I don't doubt it. Tough loss for the Cowboys, especially because there were more expectations than the Giants going into that game. We kind of talked briefly about it last night, Jack, how you felt about it. And we'll get to the Cowboys, but Gideon, real quick about the Giants. Season's over. It's been over since Saturday night. Really, it was over at 9 o'clock on Saturday. And we saw on Monday a couple of quotes come out from our general manager, Joe Shane, and head coach, Brian Daboll. For the most part, it was Joe Shane doing the talking. And from what it sounded like, it seems like Daniel Jones will be back. Now, years and money, that is all the question marks. That's right now, that's all blank. We have no idea what they're thinking, what they're offering. But if you go and look at his interview on YouTube, all signs point to Daniel Jones will be back next year for the Giants. At least that's what the team hopes. Who knows how Daniel Jones feels about coming back. But it shows me, at least, Joe Shane, Brian Daboll want him back for another year or two. And I think that's the right move. The Giants don't really have any other option at that position. And whether you're of the belief that Daniel Jones is not the future or whether he is, doesn't matter. The Giants don't have any other options. If you think Tyrod Taylor would be a better option going forward for the next year or two and you don't want to sign Daniel Jones, that's just blasphemy in my opinion. But if you're of the mindset to sign a guy for 1 year, $10 million, you know, name your average quarterback, your backup quarterback in the league, fine. You could do that. But I just don't see the Giants doing that. I see them giving Daniel Jones, I would say, a 2 or 3 year deal with an option to get out after a year or two in case he really doesn't play that well. And you have to think through the draft this year, another year, a full offseason for Joe Shane, that he can construct this roster to get Daniel Jones some better weapons, get this defense a little bit better than what it was. The linebacking crew was horrible for us. I think if you can get some guys through the draft, this team will be in a much better place. But it all starts with Daniel Jones. And I think he's earned himself another year with this team. I'm still not sold on Daniel Jones. Not saying he's bad, but I don't think we should be throwing $100 million at him right now. You know, I think it should be a 2 year, $50 million deal, somewhere in that range, 25 a year, maybe even $20 million a year. You know, I don't want to be throwing him a blank check and saying, here you go, kind of like what the Yankees did with Aaron Judge, because Daniel Jones has not earned that much money.
I was about to say, Aaron Judge had bet on himself, and it worked out.
Right, and so, and the Giants declined his fifth-year option last year, before this year started, so they already showed you right off the bat that they were skeptical of Daniel Jones, and he played well enough, in my opinion, to get another contract, and I think it should be 2 years around the $50 million mark. Now, for Saquon Barkley, it's a different discussion. The history shows that the running back position is the most replaceable position on a football team. And as good as Saquon has been for this team, especially this year, you can't ignore that he's been hurt for most of his career with the Giants. He had the ACL tear, he had ankle sprains, this and that. And really, it cost him, I would say, 3 years of his prime. His rookie year and this year were the 2 years that he was able to play the whole season and played really, really well. Since then, he's been hurt and dealing with injuries, rehabbing. He hadn't been the same. And you finally see what you get when you have a healthy Daniel Jones for the whole season, a healthy Saquon Barkley, and a really good coach. You got a 9-win football team that wins in the playoffs, that won a game in the playoffs, albeit against a fraudulent Vikings team, but they won. And the talent disparity finally caught up to them with the Eagles when they played on Saturday. But the fact that you have the coach figured out, it seems like you have the GM figured out, and it seems like you have your coordinators figured out. Now you just need to build the roster. And like I said, Daniel Jones, I think, is the best option they have at quarterback. So whether you think he's good or not, I think he's earned himself a 1 or 2 year stint with the Giants going forward. And then Saquon Barkley, it's a gray area because on one hand, you're getting quotes from Saquon saying he doesn't want to reset the market and that he's fully aware of his value and that he's been hurt for most of his career. And he understands that, you know, you're not going to get paid the most money for a running back when you've only played 2 full years out of 5. He realizes this. But then, you know, numbers come out that I think Joe Shane was offering around maybe 12 a year midseason, and it wasn't agreed upon. And I believe Christian McCaffrey's the highest paid running back right now, around 16 a year, 16 million a year. And Joe Shane said they weren't close to an agreement during the season. So we're getting kind of both sides here. We're getting Saquon saying he doesn't want to reset the market, but then we're hearing Joe Shane saying we weren't close on value. I mean, how much closer do you get than $4 million, right? I mean, unless the guy's asking, unless Joe Shane's saying like $6 million a year, whatever it is, like, if you don't want to reset the market, realistically, $12 million is not that far off. And the fact that they, quote, weren't close kind of worries me in that department. But
it's always tough to pay a running back. I mean, Saquon is an integral part of your team for sure, but it's just the thought of, you know, paying him a position that, you know, it's just like the lifespan is so short. You never know how it's going to end up. Didn't work out well for us, you know. Can argue that it rarely works out for anyone. I'd say like Derrick Henry, maybe, like
that's the only one.
Maybe Adrian Peterson.
I mean, I'm thinking more like nowadays, Adrian Peterson obviously is one of the best running backs of all time, but like, you know, nowadays paying a running back that type of money is definitely a huge risk. And Saquon's a guy who was really good this year, obviously, but he's off. He had torn ACL. He's been banged up before. He finally put together a healthy season this year, but is he going to be that durable going into, you know, more of the older years of his career? I mean, the argument that Derrick Henry had was that he was extremely durable. I don't think he missed a game up until like maybe a year or two ago, or maybe this year. So, you know, it's an interesting conversation to have.
And it's a perfect example right now with your Cowboys. And no disrespect to Zeke, because the guy had a hell of a prime, hell of a, you know, rookie contract all on those years. He had a hell of a career, but I mean, you look right now how he's playing. He's in there as a third down back. He's down on the goal line. They use him in certain packages, and it's all Tony Pollard. And, you know, I hope he gets healthy soon. It was a tough injury against the Niners, but Tony Pollard has taken over that backfield. And right now, you know, I mean, if I was a Cowboys fan, I'd regret signing Zeke to that contract, because you could spend that money elsewhere. You could get Dak. If you're of the belief that Dak needs another weapon, you can go get another weapon. If you want to bolster up the offensive line or get a defensive piece, you could use that money to get another guy. But instead, it's going to a running back that's slowly kind of deflating out of this offensive scheme and just not really being out there a whole lot. And you kind of saw the limitations they had as soon as Pollard went down in terms of a run game. So that's the worry that I have with Saquon. You know, is it sustainable? And, you know, to Zeke's credit, the only major time he missed was when he was suspended for that fighting thing. He really wasn't hurt a whole lot either, and he got his second contract. And you're seeing right now CMC doing well with the 49ers, but once he signed that contract with Carolina, he struggled to stay on the field. And so Saquon with an injury history, it worries me to give him, say, a 4-year deal like Christian McCaffrey got, right? So I am of the belief I want Saquon back, no doubt, but it needs to be for the right price. And I think the difference between Joe Shane and what we had previously with Dave Gettleman is, you heard him say in this press conference held on Monday, he said, listen, there's a point where we have a price where we won't go any farther. Like, they going into meetings, going into conversations, they, as a collective group, they've come up with a number that they will not exceed. So if Saquon wants $16 million a year and Joe Shane and his guys come up with a number around 14, they'll say, listen, we're not budging over 14, so take it or leave it. And if that's the mindset, if that's true of what he said, then I like that, because you would see Dave Gettleman overpay for Nate Solder, Kenny Golladay. I mean, the list goes on. So I think having him in this position with Saquon, again, saying he didn't want to reset the market, but it seems like he wants – I don't know which side is right, which side is wrong, but you're getting two completely different answers right now. I think your main priority is get Daniel Jones back on a favorable contract, and then you can deal with Saquon. If it doesn't work out, draft a running back in the draft. I still think they should draft a running back regardless.
I mean, I'm so focused on the wide receiver position.
I'm with you.
Right?
Yeah, the wide receiver position.
The biggest thing with Daniel Jones is going into this year, a lot of people, myself included, were like, this is the Daniel Jones year. At the end of the season, we're going to know if the Giants should keep Daniel Jones or if they should look for somebody else. And I still don't know what the Giants do with Daniel Jones. Now I'm leaning more to the side of give him another couple years. Yeah. Don't sign him to, you know, a crazy long contract, lock him in forever. But let him see a little bit. He had horrible wide receivers. On paper, they looked decent going into the season, but they ended up being horrible. Like, miserable, miserable wide receivers. Kenny Golladay was horrible.
He didn't even play.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't even play. One touchdown?
Your $18 million guy did not play. He did not start until the third stringer started in the last game. That's how bad this coaching staff viewed his game. And it's not saying he's not good at football. He just doesn't fit the scheme that they were running. And they just did not play him. They put him out there to block, and that was it.
He was on a practice squad.
Yeah.
Like, earlier in the year, played way more effectively than
And he was better. And Kenny Golladay had his chances early in the year. He was dropping passes. Like, it wasn't like he was catching the balls and then they weren't playing him. The guy literally got on the field, and I believe I was at the game. It might have been the Washington. I forget which game it was. But I remember they put him in. They throw him a ball on 3rd and 5 to get the first down, like a slant across the middle. Perfect throw by Jones. Goes right through his hands. Everyone starts booing. He doesn't see the field for the rest of the game. And this is early in the first half. So there was just never really a chance. There was never really a part where Kenny Golladay could get on the field. And you're paying him $20 million a year. Just another bad signing by Dave Gettleman. But the point is, getting to your point, I mean, and Jack, what you said about Isaiah Hodgins coming off the Bills practice squad, he was familiar with Joe Shane, but he's a practice squad wide receiver. And against the Vikings in that playoff game, he looked fantastic. So, you know, it'll be interesting, Gideon. Are you of the mindset that they should draft a wide receiver in the first round? Because I think they're picking 26th or 27th, somewhere in that range right now. And I'm not sure what the wide receiver, you know, the prospects are looking like. I know Jackson Smith and Jigba is one of them, but I can't imagine him going any farther than where we're at. But I'm of the mindset that a wide receiver, if you were to get one, whether you trade for one, you draft one, won't fix the issues here. Because, I mean, listen, that's definitely a big issue on my list. But the linebacking department was horrible. Our best linebacker was Jalen Smith, who was a Dallas reject. And he played.
I couldn't believe he was playing for you guys.
Yeah.
I couldn't
believe. And you watch him play. Like, and I watched that Dallas 49ers game, and the play where Fred Warner was step for step with CeeDee Lamb.
Oh, that was incredible.
That just, in my mind, it just said, yeah, we don't have anything like that.
But Fred Warner is he's his top three linebacker in the league.
Yeah, and I get it. But like, you look at that and you're like, yeah, no, Giant. Not once did a Giant linebacker ever make a play like that. Not once. They were always playing catch up. Jalen Smith and others couldn't guard, you know, receivers and tight ends. They struggled with. I mean, look at Hockenson. They were giving up 100 plus yards every time they played him this year. So it's positions like that. A wide receiver one would help tremendously with Daniel Jones with the offense, no doubt. But then on the defensive side, as good as they were blitzing the quarterback and keeping teams to low point numbers, except for the Eagles games, you know, you need a linebacker to be able to cover guys, and you need another corner. Because right now, you saw that stretch of games where Adoree goes down for like 4 or 5 games, and Xavier McKinney's out 4 or 5 games. That secondary was on its last legs.
That was insane.
It was brutal. And so, you know, you get a couple of depth pieces in there through the draft. You know, you add to that list. You add to that list of guys. That's, I think, what they need to focus on. So, I'll ask the question again: Would you draft a receiver with your first pick this year if you're Joe Shane?
I think I would, because you could invest in receivers and build them around your scheme.
Right.
I think drafting a receiver, you said 22 is the Giants' pick.
I have to check on that.
That sounds about right, but let's say it's 22. If you're running with the assumption that Daniel Jones is going to get a 3-year deal, a 2-year deal, he gets a, you know, whatever, a mid amount of money, does just as well, maybe a little better, maybe a little worse than he did this year, because this was his best year in the league. If he performs like this for the next 2 to 3 years, I think the Giants keep him, because when they invest in receivers around him, his numbers are going to go up, right? If Daniel Jones still had a great year with absolutely nobody to throw the ball to. So if he puts in, if he had this year, if he had a guy, let's say like, trying to go some, let's say like when Davante Adams moved teams, let's say the Giants got Davante Adams for some reason.
Right.
Right. And he's even the one option the Giants have. Daniel Jones throws another five touchdowns on the season, right? His numbers go through the roof, and his pass rating was already the highest that it was in the whole season. I think he had 15 touchdowns, like five interceptions. He would have had over 20 if they had an absolutely stud wide receiver. In fantasy terms, think of wide receiver one, you know, and the upper echelon of wide receiver ones. Right. But even if they didn't have something like that, and they had just a couple of decent wide receivers, maybe the way that they thought Kenny Golladay was going to work out, Daniel Jones would be so much better. So I think it's time to invest in people around Daniel Jones. The O-line it held up. It was fine. Of course, there's some highlights on the O-line, but I just think it's the receivers right now, because you could build, if you get a quarterback to and a wide receiver to build up around, because Daniel Jones is still young. Right, and if he gets some wide receiver right out of college, some flashy receiver, and I have to look at the draft board and see who could possibly be available at 22, they could build up around each other. It could be a Rodgers Davante Adams, you know, type of agreement.
I'm with you, and here's the other thing I look at too. Like, if you put Daniel Jones, by the way, the Giants are picking 25th. That's confirmed.
There's plenty of talent.
There's
left.
Plenty of talent. Yeah.
And you could if you needed to, you could trade up a couple picks. You know, it's not like a quarterback where you have to jump up to five. You know, you could jump up to 20 and get a receiver. And Justin Jefferson was picked 21st, 22nd, somewhere in that range. So, and even in past years, we've seen receivers go late. So it's possible. And what I look at the most, Gideon, when I look at this too, is if you put Daniel Jones on the Miami Dolphins, you're telling me the guy's not carving up the field with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle?
His numbers would be through the roof. You'd be talking about, I mean, it sounds weird, but he would be Tua. Like, his numbers would be the same as Tua. I think
he'd be better than Tua.
I think Tua has a little bit better arm strength than Daniel Jones. I think, which complements Tyreek Hill very nicely. But Tyreek Hill's also the guy, if you put the ball in his hands, he'll do whatever he wants with it and is going to get his way upfield. But yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. I mean, Daniel Jones, let's say they completely switched. Tua was playing for the Giants. Daniel Jones was playing for the Dolphins. They'd be in the same echelon, I think. Right? Maybe like a tier two quarterback in the league.
Yeah. And that's all I'm saying. And that's why I think he deserves the extra year or two to kind of build with the team. And listen, that's why you give him a two-year deal and you can get out after one. Because if next year you get him that wide receiver one and you know that talent is great, but he's the same, now you know, like, hey, it's not a receiver issue. It's this, or it's Daniel Jones, you know, or if you bolster up the offensive line and he has much better protection and he's not making the throws or he's not seeing the field, right? And then you can tell. And the common argument is, well, Daniel Jones has been on this team for 4 years, right? You should know by now whether he's the guy or not. And albeit true, you name me a quarterback who's gone through, now this is his third head coach, four offensive coordinators. That means four different offenses, three different head coaches, right, and now his second GM. The guy has not had a stable situation since he's walked into this building. And John Mara, from day one, when they hired Joe Shane, he said, you know, we've screwed this kid. Like, they have not given him a chance to win. And, you know, you could say we're holding on too long for something, we're wanting it to work out fine. But I'm of the belief, as long as you don't commit massive amounts of money, you know, you're not... I don't see a better option. So I like the idea of bringing him back. And I think if you don't go receiver in the first round, Giddy, I think you go offensive line in the interior, especially because left guard to right guard, it was pretty bad. It wasn't great. The run game was fine, but pass protection was not great. John Feliciano at center was not great. And Nick Gates was okay. Andrew Thomas is going to be an all-pro. He's going to be an all-pro left tackle type player for the next 10 years. I'm not worried about him. Evan Neal struggled a lot this year. He needs to show up
next
year.
But Evan Neal's a rookie. Like,
and it's expected, but he better get it right next year, because Andrew Thomas had a shaky first year, and then the second and third year, he really picked it up. And again, this year, I think he's an alternate in the Pro Bowl. Like, he was second to Trent Williams, who's been the best tackle in football for quite some time at this point. But if you're Evan Neal and there's no sign of improvement this year, you might have to start worrying about him. But, you know, that's another guy that has to step up. You saw it against the Eagles. He was burnt so many times in that playoff game. Hassan Reddick had his way around that right side the whole game. So as soon as Evan Neal gets better and Andrew Thomas is the same, right, you will have bookend tackles. You just need to fix up front. And you know, I think that's something that you could address. We've seen a lot of centers go late in the first round. Like, I think Tyler Linderbaum was drafted by the Ravens last year late in the first round. He's been pretty good. So there's definitely some good center and guard prospects later in the first round that you could particularly you could get. And we've seen in past years, too, where there's good receiver talent later in the rounds. Like, I'm not saying sixth, seventh round, but, you know, second or third rounds, there's been good receivers that have been taken later. Like, Christian Watson for Green Bay was a second-round pick. So, you know, you could wait on receiver. A lot of the times, the linemen tend to pan out better earlier in the round. So it all depends.
Like
Joe
Neal. I mean, Evan Neal was a high pick last year.
Right. And Andrew Thomas was number four overall when we got him. So, you know, most of the talented offensive linemen are taken sooner rather than later. And so it all depends what Joe Shane thinks the team needs first. You can make an argument for any position, really. Receiver, offensive line, particularly from left guard to right guard. I think you can make that argument. And then, honestly, I could even see them taking a linebacker, man, first round. Like, that's how bad this linebacking crew was. I could see them drafting a linebacker if one falls to them. But again, we shall see. Now, Jack, let's go over to your Dallas Cowboys, okay? Now, you've had a couple of days to let this loss marinate, so I don't expect you to be as mad as you were Sunday afternoon. But we talked briefly about this last night. Where does the team go from here? Because I am of the belief that I think it might be time to start drafting a quarterback. And I'm not saying first round. I'm saying third or fourth round, you get a guy in there, because right now your backup option is Cooper Rush, and he's not anything worth the future. He's just there because he can hand the ball off, make a couple of throws when need be, and then that's it. But I think third round quarterback, maybe you take like a Bo Nix next year, third round, like something like that, where you're not wasting a first round pick on a quarterback. I mean, unless next year Dak looks the same this year and struggles with the turnovers, that's a different story. But I'm not going to completely overreact on Dak just yet, but I do think drafting a quarterback might be a good option for them in case it goes south. You know, see what you have. The last time they tried that, right, it was Dak, right, late in the rounds there. So might not be the worst thing to do, but I'm interested to see what you say, because I know you're a big Dak supporter, even though a lot of Cowboys fans and critics right now are not really in his corner, if you will.
I am. I'm a big Dak Prescott supporter. He didn't play his best game on Sunday, and that was the reason why we lost. That's the cold, hard truth of it. The defense held their weight, and the offense, which is ultimately led by Dak, did not come through. Now, granted, I think the 49ers defense had a lot to do with that, but the truth is he didn't get the job done, and he's taking a lot of heat for it right now. I mean, maybe if you think there's a guy there that's worth taking, but there's so many other holes on this roster right now for the Cowboys. You got a lot of free agents. You got, you know, Tony Pollard's going to be a free agent, and we don't know what his future's going to be with the leg injury he suffered on Sunday. Zeke is a free agent as well. We got a lot of free agents on the defensive end. I saw a tweet that listed all the free agents out for the Cowboys, but it's a lot. And I'm sure a lot of other teams have a lot of free agents, but there's just so many holes on the team that I don't know if I can really justify taking a quarterback at any point when you have a quarterback that I think is good enough to win a Super Bowl. I still believe that. I still think Dak is good enough to win a Super Bowl. I think he needs a little better weapons on the outside, especially a wide receiver. The CeeDee Lamb has definitely proven to be a really good number one. After that, Michael Gallup had a really rough season coming off his ACL tear, and T.Y. Hilton had one great moment against the Eagles, and Noah Brown, I mean, was left a lot to be desired on the outside. I think that's really the biggest thing right now for this offense to, you know, get their stuff together here on the as they move into next season. But here's some free agents that we have, key free agents. A lot of them on the defensive side of the ball. Anthony Barr, Anthony Brown, who is our number two corner before he tore his Achilles towards the end of this season. Donovan Wilson, who I think is an incredible player for us. I think he's, like, I think he's a really underrated player on our defense, and he'd be really important to bring back in the secondary as a safety. And, of course, in the offense, we've got, you know, guys like Jason Peters, who is 40 years old, but he's still a free agent. Tony Pollard, Dalton Schultz. I don't think Dalton Schultz is going to come back, unfortunately. But, you know, there's a lot of holes in this team. That's the biggest thing. And Leighton Vander Esch, big one. Leighton Vander Esch had a really good year at linebacker. He's another one that we need to bring back. So to answer your question, DA, there's a lot of holes on this team. I don't know if it's very wise to pick up a quarterback at, you know, this critical juncture where we kind of just need to you know, retool as best as we can. I've heard some rumors about taking Bijan Robinson in the first round, which would be not a move I'd endorse, to put it lightly, to put it mildly, because you don't draft someone in the first round to probably not pick up their second contract and give them a second contract. And
yeah, I know a thing or two about that.
But with Zeke, like, you give a running back a second contract, it could really backfire on you.
Well, I know a thing or two about that. We drafted Saquon second, and right now we're having that same conversation.
Is
down
he the last
line.
Running back to get drafted top five, you think? Since, like, no running backs have drafted top
so.
Five.
I wonder what
the highest drafted running back was since
Saquon.
There
have been a couple number ones. They've never panned
Well, no,
out.
I'm talking about since Saquon.
Etienne and Najee were first-round picks.
Jacobs was a late first.
Yeah, but these are late firsts. I'm talking, like, number two pick. In the draft.
You probably have to go back to Ricky Williams.
Saquon was number two. First running back
off
the board.
Ezekiel Elliott was four.
Since 2018. First running back off the board in 2019 was Josh Jacobs at 24. And 2020, the first running back off the board was... What we got here? Clyde Edwards-Helaire, number 32, last pick of the first round. 2021, it was probably Najee. I don't know where was Najee picked.
I think it was Najee.
24 as well. So there you go. And I want to say that Travis Etienne was also 24 in 2022. No, it was actually Tyler Smith, who played pretty well for us this year. He was pretty good. Where was Travis Etienne this year? No, Travis Etienne was
I think he was
21.
That Najee draft.
He was Najee draft. Breece Hall was the first running back, I think, taken. He was taken in the second round.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, there hasn't been a running back picked in out inside, like, what, the top 20 since Saquon. So
it's and I think a lot of teams are, you know, I mean, if they haven't figured it out already, they're starting to figure out that it's just not a wise investment. As good as Saquon was and is, I mean, the fact that you're having this conversation now about, you know, whether you want to pay a guy $15 million a year, or in a case where paying him $16 million or more, is resetting the running back market. So, you know, it's I don't advise drafting a running back in the first round. I think you could get a lot of talent. I mean, take this for example. Isaiah Pacheco, 7th round pick, and he is the starting running back on the Chiefs over Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who you mentioned was a first round pick not too long ago.
And CEH is probably going to be out of Kansas City by this offseason.
That's a crowded backfield. Jerick McKinnon back there also.
Yeah.
You got Pacheco, 7th round, running the ball, and you have McKinnon just catching passes, essentially. And they found out that, hey, why play Clyde Edwards-Helaire when we got two guys that can essentially just do it better? And you're seeing it. I mean, how common is it that a rookie in any position in the 7th round becomes like your number one option at a position?
Brock Purdy.
Yeah, well, that was because two guys got hurt. This is because he earned the spot.
And he's also,
it's a little different.
He's also got, like, the Avengers surrounding him.
like, there's not going to be, like, a guy that's Priest Holmes that goes undrafted and becomes the best running back in the league. I don't think that's going to happen for a while.
No, but even if you're not the best, I mean, he's starting on the best offense in the NFL.
Yes.
In his first year ever in the NFL. So, and again, they drafted a running back 2 years ago in the first round. It's not like they needed one and they got him and they're like, okay, well, we'll throw you out there. No, they spent the first round pick on a running back after they won the Super Bowl. Like, they have found a need for a guy and they've said to themselves, see, Clyde's not getting it done. We need to get a guy in here. Let's draft Isaiah Pacheco, give him a chance in the 7th round. He fell. I thought I wanted the Giants to take Pacheco. And it's a little biased being a Rutgers student, but I saw the talent. Rutgers just never had an offensive line for him. But I saw the talent. I wanted the Giants to give him a chance. Chiefs end up scooping him up, and he's now the starter. I think he had 850 yards, and he only played in like half the games.
Yeah,
so
outrageous.
It's like he'd be a 1,000-yard rusher his first year in the NFL if he played every game.
I mean, and last week he had that 41-yard run where he hit 21 miles per hour.
Yeah, and he's a fast guy, and he runs hard. Like he,
oh my God, yeah.
He will run you over. If you're right in front of him, he will lower the shoulder, and he will run you over. So... that's just another example of a good team with a good front office doing what you're supposed to do as an NFL team. And that's what the Giants need to do. I think if they don't give Saquon that contract, you find a guy late in the rounds that will be the replacement. That will be good. Because once you have a good offensive line, it doesn't matter who's running the ball. I mean, yeah, sure, Saquon can juke guys a little bit better than one guy and maybe can hurdle a guy. But if you can hit the hole and you can run, it doesn't matter. As long as the offensive line is giving you, you know, the 10 feet of room, you're going to get 6 yards anyway.
Yeah, but this is... that's if Saquon doesn't get hurt, right? When Saquon plays, like this year, Saquon was fantastic. And we look at it from a fantasy perspective. People that took Saquon in the first round, we know very well in our WRSU league, someone took Saquon way higher than anybody else thought
Arnoff.
That he should have. Yeah, Arnoff. I forgot if it was Arnoff or not. Arnoff took Saquon way higher than anybody anticipated, and it paid dividends for him.
Right.
You know, Saquon had an excellent year. So, I mean, like it's so hard to invest money in a player where you don't know what Saquon we're going to get for the next 4 years, let's say, right?
Right.
And then who knows what's going to happen after 4 years, because chances are he's going to get injured at some point. He's a running back, an injury-prone running back, and who knows how much longer his career is going to be, being that he's a running back,
right?
Like you were saying before.
And I think he noticed, too, like, again, with the, going back to what he said he didn't want to reset the market. He knows that he's been hurt, you know, and he's aging. It's hard to be this good going forward. But he said, like, he knows he's good enough to earn a contract. And I completely get what he's saying. He doesn't want to reset the market. But when you have your GM come out and say that you weren't midway through the year, you weren't close on value, either Joe Shane is offering you $7 million a year and you're just like, whoa, that's way off, or he's offering you around 12 and you want 15 because it's not technically resetting the market, but it's right damn near close with Christian McCaffrey. And again, like what I said with Joe Shane, he doesn't want to go past that number. And we don't know what the number is, but he made it clear that with players, he going into negotiations, he has a number that he won't go past. And so I'm curious to see what that number is with Saquon Barkley. Me personally, I probably wouldn't give him anything more than 14 a year. And I wouldn't give him 4 years either. I'd probably give him a 3-year deal, maybe 2-year deal. And again, don't forget, this is also another option for the Giants. If they don't come up with an agreement, I believe the deadline is March 7th. They could place the franchise tag on Saquon. Will he play? I don't know. Maybe he'll pull a Le'Veon Bell. Who knows? Maybe he will play because he seems like a team guy. So maybe he would play.
I don't think he'll pull a Le'Veon Bell.
I don't think he would either. But, you know, you never know with these kind of situations.
That's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, right?
Le'Veon
Bell. Le'Veon Bell. And he's
Steelers
been so,
legend.
So, what's the word I'm looking for?
Mid?
Well, not mid. He's been...
Schmid?
No, I just... irrelevant. That's what he's been so irrelevant for years now.
Someone Jack, say Le'Veon Bell again.
Le'Veon Bell.
The who now?
No. Actually, hey guys, we got some Rutgers football news, guys.
Do
we?
Yeah, the transfer.
Do we pick up a commitment?
Western
we get?
Illinois transfer wide receiver Nazim Brantley has committed to Rutgers football for his final season.
That's great. Wide receiver perfect for Rutgers.
What's his name? You should say
Nazim Brantley.
He's a 6'3 wide receiver. He seems like he's a replacement for, he could be like a new Sean Ryan. 6'3, 200 pounds. He led Western Illinois in receiving last season, and he's going to be enrolled in classes on Thursday. So by then, by the weekend, we might see him around.
Nice.
He is from Farmingdale, New Jersey, so he's a New Jersey guy.
Congratulations, Nazim Brantley, man.
Welcome.
He went to Howell, so he's coming back home. So there you go.
So
now,
yeah,
he went to Howell?
That's what it says on there on his page here.
I think I know what this guy, is now.
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. See, now here's the thing, and I don't want to get. You said his senior year now. He's coming here
his
for his last year.
Year,
so.
Well, his final year of eligibility doesn't mean his senior year. He could be a seventh year senior.
I know this guy because we played Howell a lot at my high school.
Nice.
So I did not know he was over at Western Illinois. Big get for Rutgers. That's a big jump for him too. Western Illinois to Rutgers, Big Ten football.
Like the two guys I know that played big time football, I saw play on my high school field was one Kareem Walker, who went to Michigan for a little, and two, Jordan Fuller, who would end up winning a Super Bowl for the Rams and was the captain at Ohio State.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool to see like a guy you've seen play in high school play.
There you go. And
on another note, the Western Illinois team name is the Leathernecks.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So write that down in the Targum, Ellis, when you're doing your article.
But it'll be, and not to get too far off topic, but I mean, when we got these kind of transfers at the receiver spot last year, you know, we were hyping it all up, but let's be frank, it all comes down to quarterback play. These receivers are only as good as their quarterback. You know, you see it this year with Davante Adams, with Derek Carr. Right now, I mean, although he led the league in touchdowns, it wasn't the same amount of production in terms of yards that you saw with Aaron Rodgers. A receiver is only as good as their quarterback is. And right now, if Gavin Wimsett doesn't figure it out this year, you know, who knows how big of a role this Brantley kid will play. If Wimsett is hitting throws left and right, Brantley will have a great year. And it'll seem like a great pickup for Rutgers because they needed receivers. But, I mean, last year, that room was pretty stacked. You had Crookshank. You had Sean Ryan. You brought in
Shamin Jones.
Shamin Jones, right? And you had a couple of good receivers. It just did not work out because of the quarterback situation. And to Wimsett's credit, like, he didn't play every single game. He was playing hurt, right? But I think if Gavin's not the guy this year, this Brantley pickup, in my opinion, isn't going to be that as great as it seems. And I like to always praise Rutgers football. I'm a fan, but at this point, I'm expecting a 4-8 year next year. I'm not really expecting much. So this pickup will only be good if our quarterback is the real deal, and it might take a lot for that to happen. We'll see with Kirk Shiroka, the new OC, but that's kind of my mindset on this. Like, yeah, we needed a receiver. It fills a hole, but at the same time, it all comes down to how the quarterback does play in the end.
Yeah, but at least having a 6'3", 200-pound guy could fight for 50-50 balls, right? If the throw's a little off, it's like a guy with, like, Tyreek Hill. You know, it's one of those – it's like always that meme where it's like – you could just blindfold yourself and, like,
right,
whatever, throw the ball up. Tyreek's out there, you know, he's out there somewhere.
Right.
You know, if you have a speedy guy or a big guy like this, they could make moves to catch the ball, right? As long as Gavin Wimsett puts it near a speedy receiver, they could seemingly get there.
As long as he does the little things. And not saying he hasn't done them, but, you know, I haven't seen enough of it. You know, he didn't play his first year. He played a couple of limited snaps here and there in a couple games. And then this year, he played like he was being substituted every other play for a different quarterback.
I think that was also a problem, was consistency with right. That it was good in theory to do like to handcuff the running backs between Simon and Wimsett, but it did not work out at all.
Yeah, it might have been, but like in the end, everyone knew that it's just not going to be good enough for the long run. Like, we all knew as soon as it was happening, we accepted it, but we went, why are they still changing the quarterbacks? We need to see Wimsett. He's the guy. We need to see him play. We need consistency. Why are they still putting in Evan Simon? This and that. Why are they still subbing in Vedrill, right? And although we accepted it, so in hindsight we say maybe, yeah, I mean, it was the right thing to do, or okay, we get it. But I think you're starting to see that affect Wimsett right now. And so, again, I agree with you, Giddy, but he needs to be able to make the throws. And whether he will or not, that's the question that will be talked about for the months to come up until the start of the year. But to kind of go back to the Giants real quick, just to wrap up what we were talking about there, sign Daniel Jones to a 1 or 2 year, I would say probably 2 or 3 year deal, $20-25 million a year, and then Saquon Barkley, I wouldn't go past $13 or $14 million a year, and I'd give him maybe 2 or 3 years and see where that goes. And then as far as the draft goes, Giddy, I think you and I agree a receiver is probably the number one item on the list to get in terms of a position.
For sure. You got to invest.
Yeah. And I think I would be I would be on board to trade up for a receiver. I don't know how far I'd be willing to, but I also like the fact that we have a ton of picks. So trading up, I don't know if I'd want to give up those picks, especially if they're leaning towards getting a receiver in the later rounds. They don't get one in the first round, right? You want to keep those picks. So, but that's where I'm at with the Giants, Giddy. Seems like we agree on mostly a lot of things. So we'll step aside for a quick break. 7:40, the last 20 minutes of the crew up next. So don't go anywhere on 88.7 FM and WRSU.org.
And welcome back to the crew here on WRSU 88.7 FM. Jack Basaya, Gillen Allen, Gideon Fox, all here in attendance for for the crew tonight. And we got some rapid fire to go through. Gideon, I know I promised you I'd give you some mid-major basketball scores. I know how much you love your mid-major basketball.
Let's hear it.
Right now, I'm trying to find the scores. The internet's being a little slow for me right now. But I'm trying to pull up the MAC, see what kind of games were going on in the glorious MAC conference, but it's currently not working right now, unfortunately. I would love to give you some scores, but right now they're not giving it to me. Were there any games? Am I just like on days where like there's no games?
No, there's definitely. I mean, we could go to last night. Amani Bates, used to be one of the hottest names in recruiting, kind of fell off a little bit, a couple problems at Memphis. He had 29 straight points last night as his Eastern Michigan squad took on Toledo.
And we thought the Andre Hyatt stretch was cool.
Yeah.
They lost.
And they lost 2 to Toledo. That happens when you play Toledo on the road.
Okay, so there's actually no games from the MAC over the past 2 days, the last 2 days.
Before last night?
Yeah, last night, and then there's no MAC games even until like next weekend, I guess. I guess they only play on the weekends. Good for them. What do we got? We got the OVC that played on Sunday. Looks like there's some good games. Morehead State, they beat Lindenwood 72-63.
I literally couldn't even pick out those schools on a map.
Morehead State. Let's check out the Horizon League.
You know who plays in the Horizon League
tonight? IUPUI versus Purdue Fort Wayne live right now. 4:31 left in the first half.
What's the score?
Fort Wayne is up by 1 point.
Ooh, I told you that spread is just too big.
Deontay Billups is cooking right now. 13 points on 4 of 5 shooting. 4 of 5 from 3. He is absolutely on a roll right now. So
you missed it, Jack. Tabs. You missed it. Giddy put IUPUI plus 18 in his parlay for the lock tonight. And they're only down one. So there
close
you go.
Close game.
That's it.
It's too many points.
Jalen Counter is winning. Is doing good for IUPUI right now.
Wait, we were talking about mid-major basketball.
5-7 from
UMass Lowell.
UMass Lowell.
You know what?
Their Rutgers look real good right now.
Mid-major basketball. I want to check back on my favorite team, outside of Rutgers, Mississippi University for Women Men's Basketball. Let's check out how they're doing. What's their record these days? Down there.
Isn't that even a mid-major? Isn't that JUCO?
8-11. 8-11, so they are winning games. They are winning games, but they did have a tough loss to Warren Wilson, 113-86 on Sunday. Noon start, you know those noon starts, they're tough sometimes. But they are playing tonight. They got a nice. They're on the road, but they got a chance to bounce back. They're playing Southeastern Baptist College. So good luck, Mississippi University for women men's basketball. Look, I'm definitely rooting for you guys. You guys got a rematch with Warren Wilson on February 11th. I know you guys will be looking for vengeance, so good luck. But, yeah, congratulations to Mississippi University for Women.
Another story I saw poking around is ESPN might be televising pickleball.
Ooh, I'd actually
tune in. That's not on the Ocho?
It would be on ESPN2. It's just rumored, but right now the official rumor, as ridiculous as that sounds, but the official rumor, ESPN2 would broadcast 8 1-hour event recaps, and ESPN Plus would stream more than 200 hours of the APP, the American, one of the P's is pickleball, I don't know what the other one is, would have 200 hours of live coverage from the APP. 200 hours of pickleball on ESPN Plus.
That's crazy.
ESPN Plus has always got the wildest stuff going on. On there, you'll see the most random college basketball games and then pickleball.
No, and axe throwing too. They got axe throwing
and High Lie. You ever watch High Lie?
No,
awesome sport.
I have ESPN Plus. I found out I had ESPN Plus because I got Disney Plus through my phone provider's connection, so I got that through that. And there are a couple things that are not worth it to pay extra. ESPN Plus is totally worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah. You get every hockey game.
You get every college basketball game. You get every now and then you'll get an out-of-market baseball game. It's great. It's honestly really good.
Man.
And this is not related to ESPN, but okay. Have you ever seen on TV people playing tag? You ever seen that before?
Oh, that's crazy. That's cool.
You're the obstacles.
They're super fun. The professional it's going through an obstacle course to try to tag people. I've seen that. That looks fun.
Crazy.
Look at the home gymnasium for Mississippi University for Women Men's Basketball.
It's gonna be.
It looks like my YMCA at home. It's incredible. These universities.
Looks like a high school
gym. Book the trip. I'm calling Steve Peichel right now. Rutgers is playing at Mississippi for Women Men's Basketball.
I would be so down to do that. I would if that happens next year, I'll delay my graduation. That is very, very worth it to spend 36 hours on that campus doing things. Whatever
where
they
exactly
do down
is
there.
This place? I know it's in Mississippi, obviously.
Was it in Jackson or
where is this university?
Oh wow.
Columbus, Mississippi.
Hmm.
Anyone big fans of Mississippi geography can tell me where Columbus is? No? Okay.
I only know three town cities in Mississippi. Jackson, Oxford, and Starksville. And the only reason I know Oxford and Starksville is because
it is
Ole Miss. Oxford's the home to Ole Miss, and Mississippi State's Starksville's the home for Mississippi State.
It is not near a whole lot.
It's
right near the border with Alabama. It's right in the neighborhood. Remember, you guys watched Last Chance U?
Yeah.
Yep.
So the first two seasons they did East Mississippi Community College, and that place was in the middle of nowhere, and this thing is kind of the same thing.
Oh, God.
So.
Well, looks like I'm not going in there anytime soon.
Giddy will love Giddy. You want to take a road trip down there?
Let's right now.
Book okay, it right
let's
now.
Do it. It is pretty bad outside, so maybe it's a little bit better weather-wise in Mississippi. Yeah. So.
Well, bringing it back to mainstream sports for a second.
Okay, never mind. Biloxi, because that's near the shore.
Gotcha.
That's four more than I can name off the top of my head. So where does Aaron Rodgers go? We talked about football a little bit before, but this one specific story, there's so many. It's almost a quarterback carousel this year. We could talk about the rest of the quarterbacks too, but Aaron Rodgers, is he going to be a Jet?
No.
I feel like this is a Jet. They're going to do something. The Jets have the longest active playoff drought in the National Football League. I think every team has, besides the Broncos, has made it to the playoffs within the last 5 years, and they're going to get desperate. They're going to look, they had an amazing draft class rivaling the Seahawks' great draft class this year because they have arguably the best defensive rookie in Sauce Gardner, arguably the best offensive rookie this year in Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall, who I admit did not like the pick, but if he doesn't get injured, I think the Jets possibly get that 7 seed.
They could, and I think it's a battle of who's more desperate, the Jets or the Packers, because the Packers didn't make the playoffs last year, had 9 wins, and they're a team that doesn't have an owner, and it's just like very fan-based in a sense. And they signed Aaron Rodgers, a big commitment deal, and he already said he'd be willing to take a pay cut because he knows the number is not realistic or something along the lines of that. I understand the Jets are desperate to get a quarterback, but to what length will they go? I think they might go for a Derek Carr who...
Have Zach Wilson settle down, go sign like a guy to approve a deal and something like that?
Something like that. Something where they don't have to trade and give up a bunch of draft capital. I think Aaron Rodgers would be too much of a haul for the Jets, especially since they're still a building team. Like, you could argue that they have a good enough roster to win now, and it's just a quarterback is their missing piece. But any team can still build pieces. And I think if you try and trade everything for Aaron Rodgers, a guy that can only really, in my opinion, give you maybe 2 more years of good football, then I'm not a fan of that because you give away your future picks, and then you're limiting yourself to a 2-year window, 3-year window, whatever it is, right? You go out and get Derek Carr. You go out and get a younger free agent quarterback. Like, I'd rather spend that on like a Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, now, I think the Jets should go after Lamar Jackson, but
the problem with Lamar is great player, but I don't know if I trust his arm in big moment in like big moments of the game. Like in the playoffs, you look at his numbers; they are surprisingly underwhelming. Like he is not good in the playoffs, and you know, in the playoffs to win Super Bowls, you need to be able to make throws. No matter how good of a runner you are, you need to make throws. And if you can't, then you're not going to win games. And so that's what the difference is between a Tom Brady, the Eli Mannings. Those guys made throws in the playoffs, and that's what won championships. And you see year in and year out, Aaron Rodgers plays well, defense gives up a ton of points. Then last year against the Niners, defense plays well, he can't win. Just looks totally different than what he normally is. So
like the style Lamar, like the quarterback Lamar Jackson is, it usually favors pocket. The playoffs favor pocket passers more than mobile quarterbacks. I think that's what.
So he can get you in the playoffs, but yeah. I don't know if he could win you anything in there. Is my point.
Well, I think it's gotten to the point where the Jets don't want a Super Bowl. They just want to be, just to make the playoffs.
Well, baby steps. But my point being, sure, the first year you have Lamar, make the playoffs. But then the expectations have to grow because you gave up so much to get the guy, right? I mean, if you give up that much for a guy, you're expecting in the long run a Super Bowl.
The Jets, I think they're just going to make a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson.
I don't know. I don't trust his arm. As good as he is, I don't think... I mean, you're telling me you'd be comfortable with Lamar Jackson down 7 points in a 2-minute drill in the playoffs against, you name any team in the AFC in the playoffs, the Chiefs, whoever. You have faith in Lamar Jackson to lead you down the field 75 yards, make throws, and get in the end zone? I don't, personally. I don't.
I think Lamar Jackson is better. Well, if he were to go to the Jets, would have significantly better receivers.
Yeah.
You have much better options downfield
than the Ravens. Right.
But again, I'm talking about his arm. That's so my point being, even though they're better receivers, I just don't know if he has the arm capability of making big time throws.
So different example. Let's say he takes it from the 25 in a 2-minute drill.
Right.
Two timeouts. I think he could do it. Let's take it from the 50 with 30 seconds, no timeout or one timeout. Different situation. Right. I don't think he could do that. I think a 2-minute drill from the 25.
With a couple of timeouts.
Timeouts. Just got back from the 2-minute warning. He's on the 25. Other team just scored. Touchback. Jets get the ball. I think he could convert that. I don't think he converts 30 seconds from the 50, zero to one timeouts.
And that might be true because you could run the ball in that first scenario.
Exactly.
In the midfield one, you can't run the ball. And so you're very one-dimensional at that point.
Or you throw short, have Garrett Wilson go out of bounds, first down, you know, just move a chance.
You could
10-yard passes.
And you could do that. I just don't know if I would trust. I mean, you look at the past Super Bowl winners over the last couple of years. They're all pocket passers for the most part. I mean, I think the only outlier was maybe Russell Wilson, but back then he wasn't running around like he was.
No, Russell Wilson wasn't running around like he did back then. No.
Right. So you don't see it a whole lot. You have Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Eli Manning, Patrick Mahomes, all these quarterbacks, they're mainly, I mean, Mahomes is an athletic guy, but he's not going to run if he doesn't have to. He's just going to stand in there, maybe move a little bit and just rip it. And you trust that guy's arm. Now you can make the argument Josh Allen, wicked arm, but he's turnover prone. So it's like Lamar Jackson, I'm not saying he will turn the ball over, but it's almost like Tua. I don't know if I trust the arm strength. It's just like you get a guy downfield, if you have Garrett Wilson wide open on a 50-yard route, I don't know if Lamar could launch it down and deliver that ball as opposed to an Aaron Rodgers.
The one thing I think Aaron Rodgers has over Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers throws so many touchdowns and throws very few interceptions.
Right.
There were seasons I look back where he threw like 35, 40-plus touchdowns and only threw 6 interceptions.
Right.
That's the big thing. Remarkable.
What you get with Lamar, you get a great regular season quarterback because in regular season games, the pass is not so needed. But I'm telling you, you look at any of his – I'll look it up right now. His numbers in the playoffs are very underwhelming.
I mean, he's only won one playoff game. He's played 3, but still.
Right. He has, I forgot, San Diego. Tell you right now, in the 4 games he's played, he has 900 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 5 picks in 4 playoff games in his career.
So he averages 225 yards a game on the dot in the playoffs.
Less than a touchdown and more than an interception. A passer rating of 68. That's in the playoffs.
Yeah,
and he won his MVP in 2019. I forget which year it was.
2019, 2020,
whatever it was. So it was it 2019?
It was 2019.
Okay, so his MVP season, I'll even give you the playoff stat there. His MVP season, he played one game, completed 52% of his passes for 365 yards, a touchdown, and 2 picks.
Yeah, I watched that game, and I remember I'm like, this is not Lamar Jackson. No offense to Tennessee's defense, it's not like a world beater defense like who was a great defense? Like what the Jaguars were in 2017. It's not like that. Like a lot defense that'll lock you down.
Right. And then the last time Lamar was in the playoffs, 2020, in 2 games, he had 340 yards passing. So split that in half. Now you're talking 170.
He had less than 200 yards a game.
Less than 200 yards a game, and he had 2 picks, no touchdowns.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So I just don't think that's a guy you can look at if you're the Jets, because you're going to have to give up so much to get him. If you're willing to be, like, if you're desperate enough to the point where you're okay with winning 10, 11 games and then getting bounced in the playoffs, then Lamar might be your guy. He's not going to guarantee you a big Super Bowl run, let alone a conference championship appearance. He's going to get you to the divisional round, and you're probably going to get bounced by the Bengals. Let's be honest. It's just the AFC, the quarterbacks in the AFC are too good for you to settle on Lamar and hope that he can beat Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes. Name any of those guys, they will beat Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, we've gone away. Like, you thought you got away from, like, a trio of quarterbacks that dominated the conference. Go from Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Ben Roethlisberger. Now you're going to go to Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Patrick Mahomes.
And Trevor Lawrence.
And Justin Herbert.
There's a ton of quarterbacks. And if Russell Wilson gets his, you know what's together, that's Russell Wilson in the AFC. Like, there are a ton of quarterbacks in the AFC that are just, in my opinion, better than Lamar Jackson. And I just don't know if the Jets, if that's the right move for them.
I mean,
I would almost prefer Aaron Rodgers, because you might not have to give up as much because you only have a 2 or 3 year window with him.
But with what should be guaranteed success? A higher guaranteed rate than Lamar.
You would think. But then again, he's not all that great in the playoffs either. He has his moments where he loses a bunch of questionable games too. So for the Jets, I don't think drafting a quarterback is the solution, especially with your first round pick. I don't think that's the case.
Try the last 2 times. Don't do it. I honestly
think you give Derek Carr a chance, and that's kind of where I'm at with that. I don't think giving up all those picks and money to sign Lamar Jackson is the way
I say go get established. I say pick a lineman if you're the Jets. I know AVT was good before, but now you have injury concerns. I think you got to pick a lineman in the draft for the Jets.
I agree with you. All right, it's 8 o'clock, so our time is up here. That'll do it for the Wednesday crew. Dylan Allen alongside Jack Pasea, Gideon Fox, Matt Kaminsky here with you. Enjoy the rest of your evening, folks. 8 o'clock. Stay tuned for further programming. We'll be back tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, same time on 88.7 FM and WRSU.org.